Welcome to The Future is Female Powerlifting. A show where women of all strengths can explore the world of female powerlifting. I am your host, Heidi Donnell, a 60-kilo powerlifting gym owner, and each episode we bring you an inspiring interview or message to help you unlock your true inner strength potential. Thanks for tuning in. What's up, my ladies? I am back and my voice is in full effect. I know it, you wouldn't believe my voice was gone for weeks. Like, it just felt like forever. I think the podcast before, it was already, you know, on its way out. And luckily, I have an amazing husband that volunteered. I don't think he thought I was going to say yes, but he volunteered and he said, hey, you know, hon, if you need me to do it for you, I can, you know, I mean, I can be your voice. And he was sure as hell surprised when I said, hey, you know what? In my froggy ass voice. Yeah, I need you to help me out. And he came through and I heard that he was a success. So if you haven't heard the last episode with Ms. Bama Burr, you can hear my husband doing his intro, which was fantastic. But I am excited to be here again for episode number 11. Ladies, I am down and I am here to break it down for you with Miss Yessi Martinez, who is our guest on episode number 11. And this is another person who I had secretly looked up to in my beginning years of powerlifting when I first moved to Missouri from Hawaii. So, you know, first introduction was really sort of like these women I just saw online. And then when I moved to Missouri, I started going to the gym. I started working out of a gym out there, St. Robert Fitness, and I remember seeing my first Power Magazine, and now, you know, we know it as, you know, Mark Bell's Power Magazine, but he wasn't as well known to me then, and on the cover was this hot stuff. Actually, I don't know if she was on the cover. She was definitely inside. It was Yessi, and I remember just being like, wow, this chick is small. She's not very big. She's super hot. She benched, like, I think she benched 185 at the time. I think I said 175 in the podcast, but I'm almost positive it was 185. And she was pulling well over 300. She was like 21 or 22. I mean, it was something crazy. And she already had an elite total. And I remember being so impressed by, I guess, inspired by somebody who was gorgeous, sweet, and seemed like it was attainable for me. You know, like I could look back and say, wow, this is amazing. And, it's such a full circle to come, you know, now almost 8 years later, and here I am interviewing her and diving deep into her training, who she is as a woman, her struggles actually coming out, you know, into the field of powerlifting and strongman. And it's so awesome that I get to experience this and share it with you guys. Yessi is really sort of this multifaceted woman. She does it all. I mean, if you look at her Instagram, she has done strongman, very competitive in strongman, very competitive in powerlifting. In fact, she is part of the Elite FTS crew, and we talk about that a lot, about how she got into it, how she got started. She actually started off her career in fitness and, you know, stemmed from a basketball scholarship that she denied. And it sort of spawned this, you know, this feeling of wanting to compete and getting into powerlifting. And so she kind of really goes into that whole story, which was really awesome. One article she wrote for Elite FTS, which I was so happy to read, was called Experience. Your Experience is Your Power. And we really talk about how learning and having experience sort of gives you this power, you know, and that sometimes we don't have because you don't have that experience. And how sometimes it's okay to say that you don't know. And we both were talking about situations where maybe we're often looked to have all the answers and we just don't, you know, I don't know if everybody has all the answers, but it's sort of that feeling of being okay with not knowing the answers. And yeah, you know what you know, but you don't necessarily have to say that you know everything too. And there's a lot of freedom in that. Now you get to hear a lot of her recent struggles of getting into gear. Now she's been a raw powerlifter for several years. And this year she decided to go geared. And it was a whole transition for her. Not only that, but she started transitioning from high bar squat to low bar squat. And it was a difficult 6 months of transition, but she had one of the best coaches out there, the amazing Steve Goggins. If you don't know who he is, he's the Dandara powerlifting out there. And it was a big struggle for her, but she made that transition and it really helped her skyrocket her squat. We just have a lot of gems and things that we talk about with Yessi's photography, her bucket list, her salsa dancing. I mean, there's so many little things that I love that we got to talk about. And I can't wait for you guys to hear this episode. And of course, this episode is brought to you by my gym, Core Strength and Performance, out in Huntsville, Alabama, where, as my husband says, you can lift weights. If you are looking to get stronger and be around a community of people who are just strong, inviting, welcoming, cool-ass people, then you need to head over to my gym. You can reach us at www.core256.com or find us on Instagram at CoreSMP. And that's also on Facebook. You can find me, Futures Female Powerlifting, and my regular handle, Flying Purple People Eater. Y'all don't know Flying Purple People Eater. Anyways, let's get into the show. Your background, I know kind of a lot about you, not in like a creepy way. And because when I get interested, I'm really into like understanding people, especially women who've been successful. So when I, especially doing this podcast, I've kind of dove into understanding, you know, what you've done. So I'll just Google the shit out of your name. And I'm like, all right, I've seen this, I've seen that. Because I've seen stuff about you way back when I first realized, like, oh my God, there's another woman who's like my height, my weight. And she, you know, she's like, lifts all this weight. I had like no idea, you know, because really back then I didn't really know of any women besides Julia and Marissa Enda. And then even then I just didn't connect the same way. And it was when I saw that article of you and I was like, she's super hot. She fucking benches 175, like all this stuff. And she's Latina. Yeah. And I just remember that because in my mind, I just expected powerlifting women to be kind of bulky and this. Yeah. And that's when I slowly kind of started realizing, you know, the different body types and women that were around. So let's get started on that. You started at what, over at the gym out in Florida, right? Yes. 'Cause that's where you're from, right?
Yeah. So, well, I was born in New York in Queens, Queens, Astoria. So I was raised in Miami and grew up playing sports, played volleyball, basketball, offered a scholarship for basketball for college and ended up turning down. And I'm like, how am I going to stay active, basically? Right. So my brother was dating the gym owner's goddaughter, from Idolmaker Physique and Performance, located in Miami, Florida. And he's like, I'm going to this crazy gym. They do all these things. There's chains, there's bands. So I was like, this sounds like a freak show, but I'll go.
Yeah.
And so I ended up going for a day and he put me through hell. I didn't know any of the exercises I was doing because I've never heard of like West Side, what GPP was, like any of that. So he put me through that and I was kind of hooked and I was like, okay, I need to learn. I obviously don't know what strength training is. My high school provided a strength training class, but it really wasn't anything like this. So I was very fortunate to have that opportunity. I'm kind of glad my brother dragged me and told me to go down there because it literally started the course of where I am today, you know?
That's so crazy. So what made you deny the scholarship?
It wasn't a full ride.
Mm.
And I was on my own and I did not want to go and take out loans. And to change, and I had a day job and I went to school at night and it wasn't optimal. It wasn't realistic. So I was smart about it and I didn't do it. I think my brother kind of guided me through it because he went to college, he took out the loans and he was kind of the example, like, you don't want to go this route. So right. I kind of went the other way.
So at what point did that become you teaming up with Elite FTS? Because I know that they kind of just were like, hey, you want to be in our team kind of thing, right? And you're like, yeah, okay.
So it's so funny because, you know, a lot of, I don't want to say a lot, but some women are intimidated of the sport because they're like, I don't know what that is, or I'm not strong enough. And I started not knowing what powerlifting was at all. So when my trainer, his name is Randy Scotes, he has like 25 plus years of knowledge in just the strength industry and everything like that. So he came out to me and he's like, you're getting stronger. And I was 19, 20, and I still had like baby fat and I was a little bit thick and whatever. I was self-conscious. And he was like, would you ever consider powerlifting, like competing as a powerlifter? I'm like, I don't know what that is, but sure. And he's like, it's not common. Like, it's not popular for women. I think you'd be really good at it. Just try it. Of course, it's like kind of a challenge. It's like, especially you're Latin, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm half.
Exactly. So it's like when we're challenged, we're like, okay, we could do this shit, you know?
Yeah, I feel like that's a Latina thing. Like, it's because my dad is Japanese and he's so like, so chill. Like, mom. And my mom is like, she's a Puerto Rican from New York.
Firecracker.
So she's just like, go, let's go. We challenge, we take it head on. Like, that is, you know, I guess that's sort of instilled in a lot of Latin people, especially women, I guess.
Yeah, and just women in general, but I always just like say, like, anytime I could say I'm Latin, I say it. So it's funny. But, so I started doing that. And so my first couple of meets actually were not that successful. I did very poorly and it was just not knowing what I was doing, not really having the guidance in the meet, not necessarily during training. I had that support and guidance, but going to the meets, not knowing what to expect. It was a little bit nerve wracking and it's just a learning experience. It didn't really discourage me, but it actually encouraged me to ask questions and learn more. Until I actually had a successful meet, which came out of nowhere, and I ended up getting an elite total. But I don't, honestly, it's still a mystery how I got on elite FTI. I want to say I'm like lucky, I don't know, but I want to say my brother either applied and said, you know, I think she'd be a really good athlete or a really good add on to the team. I got a random phone call, and this was after I was on Muscle and Fitness. With that article. So like things started to come, like I had a bigger platform as I kept competing and stuff like that. So they called me one day while I was at work and I forgot who it was. I think it was Steve Colescott, who used to work for the company. And he's like, hey, would you be interested in being an elite FTI? I mean, I was silent. I was like, this is a joke.
I would think that.
Like, yeah. What happened?
I would think that. I'd be like blank in my face.
I was just like, is this real? I'm like, of course I would go on. And then I was just like, oh my God, yes, I'm on the team. And like, it just was this huge opportunity that year. They flew me out and it was like a learn to train seminar. I met most of the teammates, which Julia I knew of, Molly Edwards I knew of, just from previous meets that I competed in. And they were definitely people that I not looked up to, but like I confided in, and because they were always sweet. They were like while they were competing, they were helping me,
right?
You know, and saying like, what do you need? And that was like, that was kind of like the footprint that started with how I wanted to treat others, is how they treated me, if that makes sense. So So it definitely was, they were great examples to start with. Of course, Laura Phelps too. She helped me a lot. During that transition of me becoming a powerlifter and competitive athlete and stuff like that. So, but again, the opportunity to be on Elite FTS is kind of still a mystery, but I would like to think that they like me and I'm, but it's been such a joy. And honestly, it's like all the people I've met and through networking and connections and stuff like that. Like, I feel very, very fortunate to have that opportunity. So
what was that feeling for you as like, almost like the rookie? Coming in, were you
still the rookie?
I guess so, right? Because when I went to learn to train, then that's where I saw you. And you know, I look up at that panel of coaches, and you have years of competitive career and experience up there. And I guess you Jen, and you guys might be the newbies, I guess, in a sense, and some of the younger people. I would never say that, though, you know, looking at you and knowing your career and where you've been at. But how was that for you? Let's say there's a powerlifter who is somebody who's getting started and they're getting started maybe down the same path as you. What sort of feelings did you have and how did you kind of get over those? Maybe some hurdles that you had during that time.
Well, you kind of actually mentioned it yesterday when we were talking, that article that blog that I came out with, you know, your experience is your power. So I still consider myself an amateur, obviously, in a lot of ways, but I also consider myself having some knowledge just because I have been competing for the last 7 years. So with that being said, you know, you have Julia, who's 20 plus years in the industry. You have Jen Petrosino, who her background and like, and her, as far as like education is in this field,
right.
Where you have me, who just has kind of just experience, you know, my background is in social work, you know? So yeah. It was intimidating at first. And like I mentioned in that article, I hid a lot behind the image or, you know, the gym bros or like making fun of guys and like girls can do these things too, and we're better or whatever it is. And kind of going around the fact that I actually didn't know a lot.
Right.
So it's, I think once you accept that and you're not intimidated by, you don't know enough or you're not strong enough or anything like that, and focus more on how can you do, like, how can you be better? How can you do better? How can you help others? Educate yourself. I mean, there's so much content, free content, especially yes. FTS, online, where you can help educate yourself and kind of putting yourself in situations that are very out of your comfort zone. Like, I'm not good at public speaking. I am not the greatest writer, but I put myself in those situations because I have, I mean, if you don't push yourself beyond the limits, then how would you ever know, right?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
So I think it's just getting over that fear and that thinking like you're going to look dumb. Or you can't answer a question. I think it's more, I think it takes more guts to say, hey, I actually don't know that question, but maybe I can refer you to someone who does.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I don't know what that is, but maybe I can give you an experience that I, you know, I went through and kind of help them through that and guide them through that. So I think it's focused less on the fluff, I like to say, and some more what's important. And I think it'll make everything easier and you having more of an open mind.
Because it is completely different. I mean, it's 100% like just getting to know you in the first one and who you are. And maybe your mental state might have, what you were thinking going into it might be different than what I like actually read. Because I went back to read it and then I read the new one. I love the new one. I love where they went with it. And it was a lot more in depth. I thought, you know, were not so surface questions. I felt like the other one was like very like, you know, here she is. And she's, I mean, they still, to me, this makes me laugh. And I don't know if it'll ever change, but still that portion is called like, she can lift and she can kick your ass too. Or she can kick your ass too and you may like it or something like that. Which is so, you know, like one of those things where I'm like, what? Why don't you just introduce her? Yeah. Why don't you just introduce her as another lifter? Why is it got to be like that? But I understand. I understand it's like a catchy thing. And well, I mean, well, I'm recording already, so we can.
Oh, yeah. Keep it going.
So what did you, what were your thoughts when you first saw that article come out at the time? Were you, did you think anything of it? Or now that you reflect back?
You know what? I thought it was funny when I when I reread it, I was like, this is a funny article, but that's not, to me, that's not a compliment. I don't know. I just, again, it's what, how I mentioned, there was a lot of fluff. There was not, there wasn't any good takeaways. And I feel like obviously in the beginning as a lifter, I was very much an amateur all around as far as my mindset and what I spoke about and what was important. So that transition from first, you know, having the opportunity on going on, you know, that article with Mark Bell to now I have the second opportunity to be in that second publication or another publication. I was able to talk about training. And again, it's gaining that experience and finding what's important and just owning up to what you know and what you don't know.
Yeah.
And it's okay. So in the beginning, it was a lot of surface questions, and which is fine. You want to get to know someone as a lifter. But if I read that article, I would be like, I mean, yeah, I joke around sometimes and I'm, you know, I tease and I like to make light of situations, but that's not truly who I am.
Right.
If that makes sense. So I think having that comparison definitely shows my growth as a person and as a lifter. And it's okay to see that difference.
Yes.
So again,
I do think that's great. Like you're like, you can look back and think, wow, I was unaware of certain things. So I think when you shared that, I sort of hid behind memes and things like that because I knew that maybe this part, maybe programming and talking about my training the way these people talk about it, that might not be my strong point. So I sort of deflect, right?
Right. So it's, you know, it's acknowledging that. And
yeah,
it's like, well, yeah, I'm a girl who lifts heavy.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah,
you know, because I like to maintain a certain look, but, you know, I also want to push my limits. It's like, is that really going to define who I am as a person? No, it's the action. It's what are you going to do with that platform, with that knowledge, with, you know, with helping others? It's much more in depth. So, well, you know, that's kind of what I was like, oh, I hate that I was kind of like that. And I was just like about that. And people think that's what's important and it's not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do very much enjoy like the photos and I'm not embarrassed by that. Like I honestly do enjoy those kinds of things and being girly, but also being fucking, you know, I'll kick your ass kind of thing and stab you in the neck.
You know, you're Puerto Rican when you say something like that.
More than that, it's making, you know, it's, I don't know, it's just having that opportunity. I'm grateful for the platform that I have to be able to do those things and have the opportunity to do those things. So
yeah, I think it was wonderful. I mean, you really did go into depth about your training and it,
yeah,
it was awesome. I mean, I thought it was a lot more, you had a lot more to offer in that sense. And you know,
exactly.
You know, it's interesting. It's like, I wonder, me being somebody who read that first article, being new in that sense too,
right?
Maybe I felt, you know, more relatable to you because you were new still. You know what I mean? And so maybe that conversation you did have, which was very real and very much who you were at that moment,
right,
was more relatable than,
right,
like,
right.
I wonder if I had read your article that you made now, if I had read it then, maybe I wouldn't have had the same, like, oh, well, she's like, of course, she's like 8 years in and of course she's so strong, you know? Whereas I did relate to you a lot because I felt like we're closer in age. I mean, I'm older than you, but we had a lot of similarities and I felt like, oh, she can get there. I can get there. So it's interesting. So it's interesting to say, like, there's definitely a value in that. I would think,
yeah,
that, you know,
there's value in struggle. There's value in being as a beginner and learning and coming from 0 to 100 and back to 0 to 50 to 100. It's like different steps, different points in your life. And there's a lot of takeaways in that. So, I just hope what I'm doing is genuine, obviously.
Yeah.
And it's very real and people can take away from my experiences.
Yeah. So I think it's wonderful because I don't find a lot of women that go into their training that much, like that go into what they're doing, and sharing that online, because now I feel like we do so much searching for people and things that there's only a handful of people who I really feel talk about how they train and why they train the way they train and women wise. And I feel like there's a lot of men, but there's not a lot of women who kind of go into that. It's just not, especially not in powerlifting. I think there's women in CrossFit, other strength sports, but not as much in powerlifting. And that was part of the reason why I wanted this, was that not only to interview successful women who are in their whatever niche that they're in powerlifting, but they're also able to talk about those kind of things as well. Like, you know, which is super important because when I was reading your thing, I was like, huh, that's what she does for legs on her off season. She does a lot of leg press.
Julia's brain a lot when I'm off season because she kind of, you know, she's obviously very knowledgeable in that sense. But you actually triggered something for me, like, you know, with the whole women. I think it's more powerful, especially like women being exposed to strength sports. It's more powerful and it grabs their attention when it is coming from a woman.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like we're like men and women, we're kind of getting into that same level where it's like, hey, this, a man's training that way, a woman can train that way too.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel like, yes, girl power, empowerment, and I love all that stuff. But I mean, I think we're all in the same type of level and, you know, the same community, and we're able to learn from each other, no matter if you are a man or a woman.
I completely agree.
You know what I mean?
I completely agree.
So should women talk about more about their training? Yeah, absolutely. I think everybody should talk about their learning experiences because someone is able to kind of relate to that one person. Not everybody is going to relate to me.
Right.
And that's, again, your power. So I'm definitely what I hear what you're saying for sure.
See, even for me, I struggle with that because I think like once you become maybe a gym owner or in your case, once you become part of Elite FTS, it's already like, boom, she knows, she is the source. She is a, you know, the person I can refer to. And that sort of pressure is like, oh shit, I don't know everything. I know what I know, but there's like a lot of things I still don't know. And even doing this podcast, you know, I wanted to share a lot more experiences, but then I my biggest feeling was like, what if people, you know, think like, you know, I'm not the best at programming. I'm not the best at explaining certain things. I know what I am good at, but I wouldn't consider myself an expert at those things at all. And I had to let go a lot of that. Like, you know what? Nobody gives a shit because you're not programming anything at this point. And if you don't know the answer, you can find somebody amongst all these people that you're going to be speaking to who can help you out with that. And I think that is, it's, you got to be okay with just not being the best in your mind. Like, it's okay. It's totally fine. But the article you're talking about, and I'll put it in the show notes for everybody listening, but it's called Your Experience is Your Power. And I thought it was a phenomenal, I thought it was well written. So you talking about like not writing well, that surprised me, because that to me was a very well written
post. Well, also our biggest critique. So yeah. Like, you know, we're very hard on ourselves, and I get that. But I don't know. And what I was going to think of too is like with your whole, you know, programming clients or not knowing, you know, when are you good enough to do it? Mm-hmm. I think it's honestly, for me, I actually don't take on clients and I don't program, but I have a lot of women come like message me and say, hey, do you do programming, or, you know, what would you recommend, or this and this and that? And I honestly go back to like the fundamentals and basics and like simplify everything.
Yeah.
I've helped people and not charge them because I'm willing to help.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily say, hey, this is a program, 12-week program. This is exactly what you're going to do. This is your percentages. I don't know. I just don't feel comfortable doing it versus like face to face. And that's girls here in Pittsburgh that are interested in powerlifting, I was like, okay, let's meet me at the gym and we'll go over the three lifts and it'll take me 5 hours to teach you, but at least you have the basics down and you can kind of do everything on your own. So it's like, there's little things that you can help in certain ways and not feel you're not qualified or you're not good enough. If that makes sense.
No, you know? That's totally right. And you know, even like for our website, I have to make like content, right? I'm the content creator and I handle the social media and stuff. My husband hates that. And so that's why I take care of all the management. He's like, I just want to train people. And I always joke, I'm like, all right, well, let's make some more videos that are like how-tos or, you know, some things that are maybe simple, basic things, or things that are, that you like, that you train specifically, maybe, you know, benching with your wrist, just, you know, something small, whatever it is. And he's like, why am I going to make a video? There's already like 1,000 videos out there like that. And I'm like, because people want to hear it from you. It's not about the other people. They can Google that, but you want to show that you know what you know too. And that's part of it. And I think part of him was like, oh, I don't want to be like this guy who looks like he thinks he knows everything. And like, you know, my husband's very modest in that sense. And he's too modest in my opinion, you know, where I'm like trying to put my foot down. But yeah, that's funny because I think that is along the same lines. You know, you do know something and you have something to offer.
Exactly.
So let's show what you do have to offer.
Right.
So you've been doing conjugate from day one.
Yeah. So it's varied. it's funny. So if I had to describe my programming right now, it would be like a smorgasbord of everything I've learned and what works for me. So it's like, it's whatever my method is, I guess. Yeah. but starting off, I started with conjugate. And I did that for years and kind of, again, like it's like once you do something and you're at a standstill or you're not making that much progress, you kind of have to see what other programs are out there. And it also exposes you to different movements and methods that you can implement in your training that you can kind of customize for yourself. So after conjugate, I went to Strongman actually. So my second gym in Miami is called Battle Axe Gym. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
I have, yeah.
Okay. So Mike introduced me to powerlifting, strongman, just because, again, it's like my training was stagnant. I needed to do something a little bit different. So I was training for strongman for about 2 years, and I took kind of a hiatus for powerlifting. And, I mean, it was one of the best experiences, too, because I didn't reach my goal of going to the Arnold for strongman, but I did go to nationals and compete in a higher level And I think that was like one of the hardest competitions I've ever done because there was like over 40 women. I ended up placing like 12th out of 40 women, which is very surprising. I worked my butt off. He was amazing as a coach. But it also had a lot of carryover to when I transitioned back to powerlifting.
Right.
And I kept those same implements that worked for me and used that in my training methods.
So what were some of those, what did you end up taking over and still using?
So with strongman, there's not a lot of sumo stances or anything like implements that you do. So I was doing a lot of conventional pulling. I was doing a shit ton of overhead presses, incline presses, decline presses. So my bench skyrocketed. My deadlift skyrocketed. So at one point, which is, I don't want to say it's unheard of, but it's not common when your conventional and your sumo can match.
Yes.
So at one point it was at that level. I went from a 180 bench to a 205 bench. So, I mean, there was just a ton of carryover, but of course with strongman, there's a lot of wear and tear.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
With like circus dumbbells and I'm hitting my shoulders because you're trying to get implements up as fast as you can, cause it's in a time frame. So over time I was getting a lot of shoulder pain and my bench started decreasing a bit and it wasn't improving as much. So again, you have to kind of improvise, and obviously everybody knows who's been training for a while. They kind of have to figure out what works for them. If they have an injury, they have to, you know, work around it. So it's like those things that, and those experiences and that knowledge base, I was able to kind of pivot and do what was best for me. So
I know you had said that, your overhead press, your standing overhead press, was 115. Before, and that you had were doing 150 for reps afterwards, which I can't even imagine because 115 is kind of like where I'm at. I never overhead press anymore. I think I used to do it like in the beginning because I always felt like I had to, you know, like, oh, you got to overhead press. And then I went through this like snotty period of like, I don't need to overhead press. I can do it, you know, I can do other presses, you know, but
it's not for everybody. It really isn't. So,
but I think it's more of an excuse on my part. I'm just going to put that out there. It's like one of those things where, you know, you probably should be doing it, but you don't.
Right.
So it's interesting. So all your lifts went up. So were you benching at all during that time? Like flat. Okay. So you were doing your strongman time.
So it was strongman. So, I mean, I wouldn't know how to describe his method, but I was doing a lot of board presses, just getting my triceps strong. And I mean, in order to get better at overhead pressing, you have to overhead press. So we just did different, we improvised it like with pin presses, kind of like overhead. So I can work on lockout, things like that, that are kind of weak points. But I just overhead press. That's how I got better at it. And we would do it differently. We would do it for a max. We would do it as a competition style where he would time me. So it just increasingly got better. And I can't even imagine pressing 150 right now. I did it a couple of months ago. It was with some of my training partners at Union. And
I think I saw a video. You made a video, didn't you?
Yeah. And I
was like, reject.
I took to 135 and I was like, oh, this is fucking heavy. And then I tried again because they're like, come on, you can do it. And then of course I'm like, okay, I'll try again. And I ended up getting it, but it was nowhere near where I was. But it's funny how if you're not consistent with it, or like, just even if I went back to strongman, it's going to be the same process where I work my ass off going from square one to whatever level I need to be in. So,
right. So what made you switch back to powerlifting?
Cause that's my baby. That's where I started.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll always have so much respect for strongman. I think strongman is way better than powerlifting, in my opinion, even though I am a power lifter. But I just don't have, if I said, okay, I'm going to start strongman next week, I'd be lying to myself. I know I don't have the structure or just the desire to do it right now, but I definitely want to go back and eventually compete in the Arnolds. However long that takes me, but
That's something I wanted to do for so long, and I thought it was hilarious that when I was thinking about it, I was like, man, I would love to try this, because they started coming out with different weight classes at the time when I was kind of like thinking about it, and then you started competing. I was like, this is like, look at, now I know I can do it because she's doing it right now, because you're like the same stature as me, you know. I got more fat than you, but I mean, we're pretty much the same you know, height and everything. But I always thought that I was too small for it. And I actually interviewed Ashley, this girl named Ashley, who does strongman. And she's, her name is Hulk Smashley. And she's a big girl. She's, I love her. And I told her, I'm like, dude, it's just, there's just certain things that I tried. When I was at El Paso, I was at Impact Strength. And that's when I was training with Susan Salazar. Yeah. And they had, it's called West Texas Dungeon. And some of the guys that are also in the USPA, but they do strongman stuff. So they're, you know, they're training at the gym. Right. They're like, why don't you come and try it? And I'm like, okay, trying to lift up. What I thought I could do was a 100-pound stone. It was like a 90-pound, a little bit over a 90. And I just, sure, I can do it. Like, that's how I thought. I put my hands underneath it. I couldn't even get my hands under it. They're like, yeah, you just got to get under. I'm like, I'm trying. Like, how come I can't get it? There's so much technique.
It's a lot of technique. It's a lot of being explosive, just being very diligent with everything. But I think
I could pull stuff and I could push stuff, but
that makes it so fun. It's the odd implement that you're just like, how the fuck am I going to carry this for as long as I can? So that's what makes it so interesting. And like I did 3 strongman competitions, and each one was completely different. You don't know what you're getting into, and there's always one event that's a surprise. You don't know what it is.
So before you do it, they give you an idea, and then there's like, oh, but this thing.
So depending on what, you know, so there's lightweight, middleweight, and heavier weight. But you all have your set weights, and it's, again, everything is timed. So it's how long can you hold this, or how many reps can you get in 60 seconds? So, and you know, 4 of the 5 events, or however many events that they host, but one is going to be always a surprise. So that was like the always the kind of the gets you like anxious. It's like, holy fuck, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do, but I got to do it. So it's like, do you want to pose? Because it's like, you go to a powerlifting meet, you know, people are going to squat, bench, and deadlift, and that's it. Like, you know? So it's not as exciting, but again, it's just was an amazing experience. I love it, and I highly recommend everybody doing it for sure. So
I think I've got to get into it. We have all the implements at our place for the most part, and actually one of the guys that comes over on our Saturday, we do an open gym, a free open gym on Saturday, so people who are into powerlifting can come and just train for free. They can just it's a way to kind of bring more people in the community.
Yeah,
exactly. So it works out great because we're a small little spot. And one of the guys brought over a mold for an Atlas stone, and he made some for the other gym. He's like, well, I thought you guys could, you know, you could really use it. And I was like, oh, that's so sweet. So now we have to make some Atlas stones. Start throwing them around. So right now, are you gearing up for another meet?
I am. Saturday is my meet. So,
oh, it's the Saturday? I was trying to look. I'm like, I know she has one coming up, but I wasn't sure. Okay.
It's the Fall Brawl Live Large meet. In Canton, Ohio. I'm really excited about this. Other than this is going to be my first geared meet, I'm competing in single ply. But Jabez Burford, I don't even know if you know who he is, but I mean, just everybody's going to be there. A lot of our training partners, a lot of our crews, Live Large will be there. Nice. Nick is a good friend. And, you know, I don't know. I just like when it's a huge group, because it's like the atmosphere is just so much more enhanced when it's your people, if that makes sense.
Oh,
even
though
everybody is our people, especially this community, but it's just going to be fun. And we're there to support each other and just make it fun. And
I think it's funny because when I spoke to Julia, my conversation with Julia was like, how is it like being raw and not geared? Now my conversation with you is going to be, how is it doing single ply? So I've been watching your videos. I've watched some of your techniques on Elite FTS when you had your training logs. You know, some of the benching you were doing at Learn to Train, and he was talking about how to get your elbows back better, into a better position so you can pop off the chest more. So why don't you get into that a little bit? How has the whole process been? And you're doing just single ply, right?
Yeah, just single ply, even though a lot of people are like, this is usually the step in for like going to the dark side and maybe eventually do multi-ply. And I'm like, I don't know. And I won't ever say no, and I'll try anything twice, but
it's the gateway drug.
So kind of rewinding, but after training, you know, strongman and then going back into powerlifting, Casey Williams was doing my program for a bit. But then, you know, I was competing and my numbers went up, but again, it was hard for him to be, you know, he's an athlete and a coach, and it's hard to kind of manage, you know, two things at once. So he highly recommended Steve Goggins, which Mayanna Franco, from Elite FTS trained with him for a while too. So I was training under him for over a year and made tremendous progress. I mean, one of my goals was to hit a 900 total at 132. I was actually 130, but not that that matters. But he definitely helped with just relieving the stress of what am I going to do when I go into the gym? Like, what to expect? Like, everything was laid out. He's a great coach. His method was more of like a progressive overload. So he had me benching 3 times a week, which helped my bench as far as technique. But eventually, again, with the shoulder pain, I had to kind of increase or decrease the number of times I was benching. But so once I was doing that and I committed with him for over a year and learned what I needed to learn, again, I kind of filtered it out and took whatever I needed to help me with my next transition. So again, my training was stagnant. I was like, okay, I need something else again. So I was like, let me just do single ply. And, you know, that would implement overload training. It would help me with technique. You know, it's just different things like that. So I thought it was a good start with how to get better as an athlete. So I haven't been in gear for long, and I probably can't tell you much as far as like what to do, because I'm still learning. Yeah. But definitely, again, it's like finding that support and finding those coaches that are willing to help you. And again, I am exposed to that as far as being part of Elite FTS. So Dave Kirchin has been instrumental, Marshall Johnson, Julia. So I've been kind of, I hear the footsteps.
Right? Motherfucker. No, what I usually do is blurt it out, but now I'm like, well, now that he's like just walked around the whole house, I can't blurt that out. And I can't leave him outside, it's freezing. So I'm like, you can't go outside. We have a lot of hardwood floor.
But again, so the first thing I would say, like any raw that's interested in going into gear, I would say first, see what kind of gear you should be getting into. A good source for that would be Joe Jordan. Just getting measurements, sending that information to him, and he'll be like, okay, this is good for you. I would invest in this type of equipment. So that was my first step as far as going into transitioning into single gear or single ply. And there's going to be a few bumps in the road because, again, it's getting into gear, getting comfortable with it, and everything was fine. I was, you know, obviously lifting heavier weights. I was learning gear. I was learning how things like to work on what accessory movement to help with, you know, supplemental and my main movements and stuff like that. But then my gear started getting big because it stretched over time. So what do you need to do? And ask these questions. Dave Tate was a good source too. And I was like, what do I need to do to make this easier? He's like, well, you have to have your training gear. You have to have your competition gear. So I learned that you have to have two suits. And then eventually he said, and obviously this is a lot of investment. I mean, gear is not cheap. Mm-hmm. So for someone who's like, well, I can't afford it, I understand. Like, maybe you shouldn't be in single ply anyway. Yeah. But as far as if you are serious, investing in that and figuring out what works best for you again. So I ended up losing weight. So I went from 137 to 130 because I started this effort and clean. It wasn't like anything that I did different. It was just eating cleaner, sleeping more. I was sleeping like 7 to 9 hours a day, and just started getting cleaner, smaller. So again, like figuring out what to do during that transition. So once I started getting accustomed with everything and kind of getting the guy that I needed to get, it was kind of easy. I think it's not as hard as people think, especially single ply. I think multiply is definitely more challenging because you have very little room for error.
Yeah.
With multiply, I feel like someone explained it perfectly. Single ply is just like a really, really, really tight singlet.
Yeah.
but honestly, it's like I wasn't worried. I was just trying to I picked this meet just to kind of get my feet wet and see what the atmosphere and what it's like to get into gear and the timing and everything like that, just to see what that feels like and what that looks like,
right,
as a kind of like start the course with how to deal with everything, if that makes sense.
No, totally. And it's, so when you were with, Steve Goggins, were you deciding to do gear, or were you just like, I need a different change, and so I'm going to start training with Steve? Cause you went from high bar to low bar squatting, and you had said that you went from your normal, nice, great squat to 135 because it was so difficult for you in the beginning. And so, would you say that's one of the biggest things you took from that training with him? Because I know you're saying like, oh, I like to pull things from here and, you know, take it, mash it around. Is that something you continued to do was low bar?
I continue with low bar. And honestly, what I learned from training with Steve Goggins is patience.
Oh, really?
Everything. Honestly, because when I had to transition from high bar to low bar, I mean, that was the most frustrating 6 months of my life.
Wow, 6 months.
It took like 3 to 6 months to get accustomed to it. And I couldn't even squat 135 on a low bar once I started doing it.
Wow.
And then I eventually added like 60 pounds to my squat.
Yeah. So let's take that away a little bit. Cause when you said that, I was like, that is huge. And I think that when you're at a point where you're at, so you're at a, you know, you're at a very elite level. I think a lot of people at an elite level do not change a lot of that. You know, I mean, I think the good ones will try to take some experience, try to improve themselves somehow. And, you know, the more successful ones like Julia, I mean, that's a perfect example of somebody who's trying raw. I mean, she revamped her whole way of pulling. I mean, everything is pretty much different for her. And I actually have changed my deadlift. I'm trying something a little different. And it's so hard for me. And it's been taking months to kind of groove the pattern. And I'm not dive bombing anymore. So I'm pulling just straight. I would say almost similar to, I think, how you pull. I just kind of come straight down. I'm starting from the top versus from the bottom kind of feel. And it is a shock to your ego a bit, having to drop that weight down and kind of relearn something. But that I think that is an important thing to know, that, you know, if you are going to somebody else and you're learning from another coach, that you are taking away and you are, you know, trying to take what he gives you. Because did he tell you like, hey, we're going to change your squat, I think you should be low bar squatting? Or
in a way he did, honestly, because you know, everybody's leverages are different, and high bar just wasn't working. So he's like, you know, women do better with mid lower bar placement. So I was like, okay, I'll try it. And a lot of frustration with some people when they are transitioning to something new is the patience portion of the training. You know, oh, okay, well, I've been doing this for 4 weeks, nothing's working. Well, okay, if you want to see progress or you want to commit to something, I always advise people to commit for a year to do something. And that's not with like accessory movements or anything, but obviously bigger things like that, I would say commit and see what happens. So he basically said, let's squat from a high bar to a low bar. Let's bring your stance a little bit closer and not so ultra wide. You know, it's just different things that I had to change, and for the better. Obviously, I'm a better lifter for it. So, again, I took that patience with single ply because it is a lot of patience. And it's like, okay, well, my gear is not fitting right today, or I can't get the bar placement right, or, you know, my elbows are tucking too much when I'm benching. And it's just different cues as well that you have to learn. So, you know, for the bench example, and you mentioned in Learn to Train when Dave Kirshen was coaching me, he's like, you actually have to flare your elbows to lock out. And that's not really per se like what you do for gear or straw.
Yeah.
So it's just learning the different, you know, motions and movements and how things are supposed to feel and stuff like that. So those things I'm learning, and hopefully will make me a better lifter.
Yeah. I don't know if I'll ever get into gear. I just think like I'm too lazy. Like, to be honest, like, you know, I don't know if I'll ever have that time in my mind, because I'm always like doing a million things where I'm like, I can take that time to really develop my training differently. Like right now I'm just in like salvage mode. Like I'm all right, let's doing a 6 week like hypertrophy block right now. And then I'm going to get into training for next year. But really I know the time that needs to be devoted to those kind of things. And I'm like, man, I don't know if I'll ever,
I mean, at least be honest with it. Yes. And you're not like, I'm going to do this, and then you end up falling through. Yeah. So it's, you know, yeah. you're being honest with yourself in a way. So I think that's good.
Oh, yeah, I know what I'm not capable of. I know my weaknesses.
Your what?
So let's get off topic a little bit, but I wanted to hear more about your photography because I love your photos. When you're like the daisies and you're like in the fields, like it's really pretty. So what made you kind of venture out that you just always had a hobby for that?
So I've always had a thing for pictures since I can remember. And I've always liked being in front of the camera because I always told myself, I'm like, you're the youngest you'll ever be. You'll want these photos. Yes,
the hottest you're going to look. Take advantage now.
So yeah, I just like the artistic part of it. Like, you know, when I'm just as much as I'm behind the camera, in front of the camera, I like doing like the visual and, oh, well, this will look good. And, yeah. you know, yeah. let's make this idea into life, or, you know, just different things. And the creative process and the creative aspect of it, I've always really enjoyed. And some of my friends tease me because they're like, is this going to be like a paid thing? And honestly, it is a hobby that I just enjoy, and I give my free time as well. And when I shoot people, it's for, like, I'm not saying I'm going to always do it for free, but as far as right now and just doing it as like a teaching tool for me, another outlet for myself. Yeah. You know, it's again, it's getting into that space where it's like, oh, I can be creative. I can learn. I can do whatever the hell I want. I want this to be moody. I want this to be bright. I want this to be happy. So it's like just having that space where it's like, I can do whatever I want. And that's just the creative process about it. So, but with pictures, I've always been fascinated about it. I'm the person that has a camera all the time, taking pictures of random things or random moments. Right. I don't know. And it's like when I revisit those photos, it's like, man, I remember being super happy in that moment.
Yeah.
Or I remember like those two old people that were holding hands and they were super in love. Like, you know, that's like the girly aspect of me.
Yeah. It sort of snapshots like emotions, you know, so yes. you really, I think that's what it feels like too in your photos. So I could see that being an outlet. And I think everybody kind of needs something like that, you know, like yeah. that elicits some sort of emotional feel. Like for me, that's dancing hula. Like I love to dance hula, but I don't do it anymore. And yeah. so now when I do, I become my mother. Like we always said, you're not going to be your mother, but I become my mother. There's a Hawaiian song that comes on and I take a hula break. And she used to always say that as a kid. I'm like, mom, hula. She's like, okay, hula break. And she would break out and dance, you know, like in the middle. Love that. Yes. And so what do I do? I'm cooking dinner and I'm like, oh, my favorite. Okay. And I just start like dancing and I'm like doing my thing. And it makes me laugh. But you know, I think it's important that that women have a balance of that too. You know, I think I had spoke to Amanda a couple of weeks ago, and she talked about how like when a lot of people start off in fitness, especially women, I find some women use it as a way to kind of maybe cope with what might be happening personally. You know, and then it becomes another obsessive behavior, but now is masked by it being healthy and it's fitness. I'm at the gym. Oh, I'm controlling my diet, but then that's just the surface. But when you look deeper, there's a lot more. Exactly. It's just another thing. And so I think that it's important that you have the gym and fitness, and that's great, but that you have something else that lights your soul on fire, something that gives you just a little bit more passion, because it can't be all that.
I think that's why powerlifting is growing, whatever that means. Yeah. We think our community is bigger than what we say it is until we go out in public and they're like, what's powerlifting? Yeah. Is that
CrossFit? Yeah. Thanks.
But honestly, obviously social media has helped expose that and stuff, but I think it's the camaraderie. Like people like to be part of something. It's more than an outlet. It's having connection with someone. It's communicating. It's not feeling alone, or, you know, it's just different things. I feel like, and that's why I'm so proud of being part of the process and the transition. Because when I first started, it was not like this at all. Mm. There were very few women. And I mean, when I would compete in strongman, especially, I think there would always be like 5 women and like 40 men.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Powerlifting, it would be, you know, like 3 girls and, you know, all the men. And one of my meets, actually, the experience wasn't great. It was I've always wanted to bench a plate, which is so cute.
Yeah. big boy plate right there.
So I was, I forgot what meet this was. It was in Ohio, of course. And I was, I think it was like my third attempt because my max was like 125 and I really wanted 135. And I ended up not getting it. And one of the girls ended up celebrating that I didn't get it. Mm. Like powerlifting meets are not like that anymore. Mm. So it's like, you know, people say, oh, you know, people trash talk on social media and like we highlight the bad stuff, but there's, I think there's a lot of good because it's stuff like Molly Edwards or Julia where they're in meets competing, but they're concerned about other people. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like everybody's willing to help now. And there's a sense of community in that. So I feel like the sport is headed in a great direction. So.
Yeah, I agree. I, you know, before we finish, there's a few things I wanted to also ask you about your salsa progress.
Yeah.
So you have a bucket list for those of you who don't know, she has a bucket list and on her bucket list and of things that make her uncomfortable.
Yes.
She wanted to try salsa dancing. Yeah. So you wanted to enter a competition. Is that right?
Yeah. So my bucket list
eventually
enter a so I'm planning it next year. So I ended up visiting a studio and they provide the partner, which he's great. I danced with him a few times for a few lessons and I told him what my goal was. And I think it was just a fun thing. Again, it's just a different thing. I'm obviously Latin. I try to do as many Latin things as possible.
I think it's good because when I do it, I look stupid. Yeah. Like, and they all expect me. Yes, no. Like all my cousins who live in New York, they all laugh at me because I was born in Hawaii, raised on in the West Coast. Part of my life and then part of my life in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And so they're like, you don't sound Puerto Rican. You kind of sound Mexican. You know, you say things like hella and Coolio. You remember when Coolio was in?
Yeah.
I don't know. You're from New York, so you guys might have not said that. But when I was in high school, I used to say things like that. Like, oh, that's Coolio. And my cousin's like, what? Who the hell says Coolio? Like, what? You Californians, you guys that don't know nothing. And like, she'd give me a hard time for everything. It was so funny. But I always feel like I'm not Latin enough. Like, it's
I'm super Latin as much as people always make fun of me, like, oh, you're white, you're in Pittsburgh, blah, blah, blah. But I am
so. No, you don't cross me as like white.
All my friends make fun of me. But no, I'm always dancing, especially when I'm cleaning. I'm usually like in a. This is going to be probably too much, but I'm like in a bikini or something like that. And I'm like earphones on. I'm listening to Mark Anthony or Celia Cruz or anything like that. And I'm like dancing with the mop. And it's,
yeah,
I always get caught and some people have films, but that's fine.
That's so funny.
I am super, super proud to be Latin. And the reason I'm doing the competition is because it's part of our culture. And it's like, yeah, that's something I can, again, be expose my like self to that kind of, you know, Latin community.
Yeah, totally.
So it's like I'm doing these little things. I mean, they're all really just outlets or things that I just want to learn more about myself. So I just put myself in those situations to kind of get to know what I can do and what I learn about myself, you know? So
yeah. And what do you have to lose? Like, I think that's the biggest thing is that people are always afraid to take that small step, yeah, because of embarrassment. But I've learned to let so much of that go nowadays. Like, even I used to get so stressed out about deadlines and certain things and, oh my God, you know, just kind of like fucking internalize it so much. And then now I'm like, you know, what really is going to happen? Nothing. I mean, even if I'm a day late or if I don't get this, and it's no, there's no real deadline sometimes. It's my own mental deadline. Like, no, if you're good, you get this done by this time. You do this by this time.
Yeah.
Good business someone does this. Mom has her list down. She knows where she's going to go for this field trip that I don't know where I'm going to go today, for example, because I'm like, I'll just Google it right before we go. But those are the kind of things that I think, like, you know, you got to kind of let go of that and have a little more fun with life. And that's exactly what
it is. And like with interior design, like, I'm so into that. I make fun of myself and I describe myself as like, if like these celebrities were to have a baby and it would be me, it would be J-Lo and Joanna Gaines.
Oh, that's right. Because you did fix up your kitchen or bathroom or something.
Yeah. So I've been doing a little bit like more projects. And then now that I'm in my new apartment, I like decorated it and it's just like something like another outlet. It's like, I love that stuff. And like, I design my own house when I eventually have my own house and stuff like that. So it's like different things and I really like it. So
that's so awesome.
Yeah. So,
so to wrap things up, I like to ask, and I asked my guests, what the hell was I thinking? So was there a time in your life when you're training where now you look back and you think, what the fuck was I thinking doing what I did when I did what I did?
Oh my God. Yeah. Holy shit. I have a lot of those. I think the one that's popping, like it's coming
immediately
to mind is I bombed out. So FYI, I bombed out in 3 meets. It happened. Wow. Yeah, when I first started lifting. And that's just the amateur approach and ego talking and not playing it smart. So it was when Jack, I don't know if everybody remembers that, Jack, the powder.
Yes, Jack 3D.
Heights.
Yeah.
I was one of those that like put ointment like before I trained, and I had to do all these things, and I had to have pre-workout, and I, you know, and this is like why we emphasize a lot is like what you do in your training is what you do in your meet. I wasn't doing that as a beginning lifter, like a beginner lifter. So I was like, no, I have to be more amped. So instead of 2 scoops of Jack, I'm going to do 5 scoops of Jack before I squat or whatever. I ended up having caffeine overdose. I've never even told this to anybody. I ended up having caffeine overdose and bombing out in the meet. And I was calling my brother crying, like, I don't know what the hell's wrong with my body. He's like, well, there's a warning label on the jacked supplement thing. You exceeded it. And he's like, you're an idiot. So that is one of the stupidest things that I've ever done. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but this is just to go to tell you that you make stupid decisions or you make stupid mistakes and you learn from them and never do them again. So for people that think that they have to do all these fancy things and take all these fancy things, it's facade. Like it's not true.
That is so crazy because you're light. So you took 5 scoops. That's crazy. All that beta alanine and the niacin.
My tolerance was so high in the beginning. And
oh my God.
After that, I obviously never took any I don't take anything right now. I just take multivitamins and stuff like that, but that's it. Like I don't do pre-workout. I don't do any of that stuff. Like you don't need it.
Isn't it funny how we go through that route? Like in the beginning, it's like, what can I take? Vitamin this. I took so much shit. CLA. I mean, all of that. And now it's like, I'm lucky if I get my protein in, like, and that I almost went too far, you know, like the pendulum is swung the other way where I'm like, I'm not even making sure that I'm getting all my protein in, which is pretty important if I'm going to be training.
Yeah. So, I mean, looking back, I complicated a lot of things and, you know, looking, obviously the transition and the growth now is I simplify everything in order for me to, with my nutrition, I eat food, I hydrate with water, I sleep 7 to 9 hours. I don't, oh, what's your warm up? Do you do anything crazy? No, just warm up with squat, you know, warm up with deadlifts, warm up with the bench. Like you don't have to do anything fancy. Obviously, if you have injuries and stuff like that, that's a little bit different and that's a different approach. But if you're healthy and I mean, just simplify it. It's very, very simple, you know?
Yeah. I'm glad you shared that story, to be honest, because I feel like, don't you know, a lot of people have done the same thing. I know so many people.
Really?
So many people. And I don't know what it is. I feel like every meet I've gone to, there's always a pre-workout circulating. Like people are just passing it like it's a joint. Like, hey, you need pre-workout. You need pre-workout. People are like, oh, I've never had this before. Let me take it right before my meet. No, I've heard that happening a lot. And I feel like every once in a while, I'll see somebody's story and they say that same thing. I did the same thing. I didn't take 5, but I sure as hell took more than I should have. I can't even imagine taking that now because I barely have coffee, you know. I mean, coffee is like the only thing I take. And I take these little Strike Force packets. Have you ever had that?
Mm-mm,
no. They're like a liquid packet with caffeine, but that's all it pretty much is. It's just like caffeine with a little bit of flavor and you pour it into your water and that's it. And that kind of just gives me like a little burst. But yeah, that's so funny. I'm glad you shared that one. But this has been fantastic. And for everybody who's listening, everything she talked about today, I will put in the show notes. So I'm going to list your blogs, where you can find her training logs at Elite FTS, your Facebook handle I'll put in there. And I will have links to Joe Jordan, because Joe is a badass. And if you guys are interested in gear, she's somebody that, you know, she recommended. And he got like a 900 plus the other day, right?
They did amazing. Dave Kirshen also just competed. Everyone did amazing. I'm so proud of those guys. I love those guys.
So at Learn to Train, I got to sit and talk with Joe and Christian and Julia, and we were all sitting in the lobby at that hotel. You know, it's like the only hotel in that town.
A lot of memories there, by the way.
Is there? Okay. So it felt like it was really nice. So we were just sitting there, me and my husband, and we were talking with Joe for a long time, and I love him. He's such a cool guy. And we were talking about family and everything. And he makes me laugh because we were talking about military and his wife is in the military. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And he's like, you would think it'd be me, but it's actually my wife. And yeah. It's so, yeah, he's a cool, cool guy.
I call him Edmano, which is brother in brother. Spanish. So yeah, him and I are very close. We don't talk often, but when we do, it's like, you know, no time has passed. So yeah. He's always been a good support, and I love that guy for sure. So he's definitely a good source.
I think it's one of those things where you look at him and he can be intimidating because he's got this big beard. He's kind of like bald and wears the headband. You would look and you're like, oh my God, I don't want to talk to him. But in reality, it isn't until you really talk to a lot of these people that you think most of them are not like that. Most of them are actually very welcoming. And I think that's something that everybody should take away is like when you see those people, don't feel intimidated. There's a lot of times I just said, fuck
what
it, just walk
what I say to people is strong people are just people too. You know, so one of the girls at Union was intimidated and she was kind of like, you know, I don't like to lift at certain times because more people are there that are lifting super heavy. I'm like, you know, everybody has to start somewhere. Strong people are just like people as well. Like you can talk to them. They're not some, you know, God-given
thing. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
yeah. And they're probably not going to judge you. Like I always say, they really don't care about your lifts as much as you think they might. Like they'll probably be supportive of anything, but they're not sitting there looking like, oh, is that only 185? No, they don't really care.
We have those assholes around and that's fine. Like, you know, that's what it is, what it is, right. But it's, you know, just don't be intimidated.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
I feel like we had a lot done.
I know, but you know, it's so crazy. Like, I feel like we only like scratched the surface.
Yeah.
So we're going to have round two.
Hopefully.
Well, yes. Oh, yes. No, yes. We're having round two at some point. So maybe like in a month or so, or 2 months or something, like maybe after you've done like this meet for sure.
Yes.
That'd be good. So then we can kind of hear a recap of how it was for your first geared lifting, which would, I think that'd be interesting for a lot of people.
Yeah. I probably have a lot more takeaways and a lot more, you know, stuff to give as far as pointers and stuff. So.
For sure, for sure. Thank you so much. Do you like Jessica or do you like Yessie? Or do you like Yes, as Julia likes to call you?
Yeah, I don't know. I have so many names. How about whatever you want?
Okay, I like Jessica. It makes me feel Latin when I say it. Okay.